As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to a live edition of Allocation Disorder. I am Sam Staskel, joined as always by Paul Tenorio. Paul, what's going on, man? Tell the people what we're doing here.
Sam, it is good to get this thing launched with a live show. I'm excited to do it this way. We're doing it this way for a reason, Sam. We have a new home. The Athletic Soccer Show feed has launched. That is where Allocation Disorder is going to live going forward, along with a couple other shows that our colleagues at the Athletic soccer team will be hosting. We're super excited about the opportunity. We're going to do some new things with Allocation Disorder, including Allocation Disorder 1v1, where we do interviews with different soccer personalities from around American soccer and maybe outside of American soccer here and there. We'll see. But we thought it would be a cool way to launch the show this way, the new feed this way, and to let people know where they can find us and to do a Q&A in a new format, to have people come up on stage with their questions instead of tweeting them at us as usual.
Yes. And just for those of you who do not know, the new podcast feed, the Athletic Soccer Show podcast feed, you can find it everywhere you find your podcasts normally. Also, you can find it on The Athletic in that app. It's on YouTube as well. It includes Allocation Disorder, of course. It also includes Soccer Every Day with Alex Abnos, one of our editors. Just kind of a general rundown of the happenings going on in the world of soccer. And in an offering I'm especially excited for, it includes Copa with Felipe Cardenas. Felipe, I'm excited for him to kind of launch all of the hot takes that we get to hear on our staff calls. And put them out into the universe and see how people respond to them. So that'll be fun. And then, you know, we'll probably have some more things coming down the pipe, I'm guessing, from other members of our team. But Paul, order of the day. MLS transfer window is coming to a close. There is news happening. Ricky Puig may be going from Barcelona to the LA Galaxy. Gaga Slonina going from the Fire to Chelsea in a sale that was completed yesterday on Tuesday. Some other potential happenings as well, but let's start with the Puig stuff. It's been reported pretty widely that deal is done. I have a question, several in fact. How? This guy was reportedly on $4 million a year at Barcelona last year. The Galaxy don't have any open DP spots. He's not a free agent. It would have to be some sort of loan move. Presumably there would be a fee involved there. How could this get done and the Galaxy still be compliant? Can you explain it to me?
No, at this point, I don't think anyone can explain it. It'll take some explaining. I mean, that's hopefully what we can do with this move if it does come to completion. I think part of the reason there are even bigger questions here, typically we could say, oh, it's a loan and there's an option to buy that would make him a DP at the end of the year. And that would make, that could be done and could make sense. But we know that Barcelona is looking to cut costs, right? They need sales to happen. They need to get rid of salary. And if you are only, they presumably want to get rid of all $4 million of the salary, not just $1.5 million of the salary. So, that I think adds a whole other layer of complexity to how this deal gets done. And then, of course, you have the salary cap that you have to contend with as well. So if this deal is done, I'm sure the Galaxy are, you know, working to try to fit this player in, whether it's TAM or not. You know, I would assume that it's not a designated player. I don't think anyone's going to be taking any of those DP contracts off of the Galaxy's books anytime soon. Kevin Cabral's got like 7 more years of his deal with the Galaxy. Not really, but he did sign a 5-year contract.
He's on the Bobby Bonilla life cycle.
He's on the Bobby Bonilla life cycle. So it's an interesting one. But Sam, when you and I were talking about this privately, I thought it just kind of flagged the way your story did about Ernst Tanner and John Thorington and Gareth Bale, that more and more often we're seeing these types of deals happen where players want to come to MLS. They don't really fit with teams in their salary caps or under the rules, and teams are having to find different ways to convince players to come on different dollar figures in order to fit them here and there. And it leads to speculation. And, you know, ultimately, I think it's also probably leading to quite a few players that aren't coming to the league.
Which I think is fine in certain ways, because anytime you have a limit, you're going to run into that. There are going to be players that want to come that you aren't going to be able to sign. It's just kind of the unnecessary siloing that makes that even more difficult. And I think maybe we're seeing that a little bit of that here. To kind of elaborate on how this could happen, right? It could be a loan, probably with an option to buy. Puig gets maybe put on a TAM salary during the loan period for the Galaxy. And then Barca picks up the rest of the tab for that period. And then maybe he goes back and just continues making his money, and it's a short-term solution. Or maybe they look to sell him somewhere else in January. Or maybe the Galaxy can offload one of those DPs in the offseason and sign him to a proper designated player contract. So maybe there's something like that going on. I don't know. It's going to be interesting. Maybe they have to move a player in order to get this done. That wouldn't be shocking to me either. Yeah. Paul, we have quite a few people listening. If any of you want to jump on stage and ask a question, feel free to flag it.
Yeah, I see.
Paul is managing that. I don't know if any people have done
that. Yeah, Doyle was there, then he wasn't there. I see Pablo's here.
We weren't good enough to keep him.
We weren't good enough to keep
Hater.
Matt Doyle. Unbelievable.
But yeah, if anyone wants to ask a question, feel free at any point.
Yeah, this is a live Q&A. It's not just Sam and I talking gibberish about things that we usually get angry about on allocation disorder. So if you have a question, I mean, it's going to be that if no one raises their hand, and probably in response to whoever's question, whatever the questions are from you guys. But yes, we want you guys to ask your questions, and we can all yell about MLS rules together while we're waiting for somebody to raise their hand and come on stage. I thought we'd drop another little transfer news nugget. Just that one name that both of us have been hearing that has interest in coming to Major League Soccer in this window, and that could be driving some interest around the allocation order, is center back Matt Miazga. Not sure where he's going to land, whether he's going to land here. You know, I think both of us have heard he's seeking decent money. And so yeah, that,
I'm sure,
you know,
he's on decent money.
Right. He's got one more year under contract with Chelsea. And he would have to come through the allocation order, but I thought we'd drop that little news.
Yeah, okay. I mean, there have been pretty persistent rumors that Cincinnati is interested. I heard that it's not new info, not current, probably about a month ago that since he was interested. They, of course, hold the top spot in the allocation ranking, so they would not have to trade. Although, personally, it would come as a blow for me, because I just hope Chris Albrecht continues to hold that spot forever, even after the transfer window closes, and keeps trading out and then immediately back up into it and just manufacturing game. That's one of my favorite things that's happened in MLS all season.
Shout out to Chris Albrecht. He's done a good job in his first year in Cincinnati. Okay, we've got two people who would like to come on stage. Ryan, you're first. Ryan Hetu? Ryan?
Sounds right, Paul.
Mike is yours. You're muted right now.
Can you hear me now?
We got
so you. As a Sporting KC fan, this year has obviously been woof. They also feels like MLSsoccer.com and a lot of outlets kind of seem to avoid maybe criticism of teams at the bottom. Maybe it's kind of a collective bargaining thing, but it's felt like 14 years of the same coach, who has been incredible for us overall, maybe isn't doing so well lately. Just kind of your thoughts, if you're willing to give club that it's so entrenched with its leadership. I don't know if it's a change or if it's just we haven't made the best free agent signings with, I would say, Ben Sweat, Kyrie Shelton hasn't really done anything. So for the fans over here, I think there's a lot of that. Do we stay loyal? Do we ask for accountability? Love your thoughts.
Awesome.
Paul,
thank
you want to lead off?
Yeah, sure. I'll lead off on that. Look, I think it's been a difficult year for Sporting Kansas City, but if you look even at the recent history for Sporting, it's been pretty good. I mean, they finished atop the West last year, right?
No, they did not. Colorado, they were second.
Second. I don't see Peter Vermes changing, being changed, being fired, being moved out. I do think, though, Sam, there is a conversation worth having about the structure there in Kansas City. Peter Vermes, of course, is both the sporting director and the head coach. He's got Brian Bliss with him as the technical director who handles a lot of the day-to-day. And we think that's really important if you're going to have dual roles. There aren't very many people left in the league that have those dual roles. You know, obviously, Bob Bradley does now, Bruce Arena, Peter Vermes. Those three guys have been in the league for a really long time and have had a lot of success. Greg Vanney sort of kind of is seems to be maneuvering toward that role, but doesn't have it officially. Right. I don't know. I wonder whether at some point Peter makes the move to go upstairs permanently and doesn't coach. But I don't know that a coaching change is what's needed at Sporting Kansas City.
I mean, so I think we need to start this conversation with the fact that Alan Pulido and Gotti Kenda missed the entire season. Anytime you're down two DPs, most teams in the league, that's going to really, really hurt you. I think it's also the context is important here. You know, Sporting finished fourth in the Shield last year, third in the Shield in 2020, 21st in 2019, third in 18, and 11th in 17. You know, Vermes has been in the playoffs almost every season, apart from that 2019, and then again this year, it looks like. So I think he's more than capable of being a successful coach and a successful GM at the same time in MLS. He's proven that. I don't think that's changed. I think what he is, though, you know, he may be guilty of a few things. One, I think he probably rode that core of Zusi, Espinoza, Beisler once upon a time a little bit too far and a little bit too hard. The window closed on them. They tried to extend it another year. Didn't really work. That happens, you know, and we'll see if they're able to reload. But the other thing that's been a consistent issue for Sporting Kansas City is just kind of how they've progressed within seasons. Typically, this is a team or a club that has done pretty well out of the gates and then faded over the second half. They've always sort of played a pretty high intensity, high press style, even before that was really in vogue all over the world. Sporting fit, you remember that phrase from back in the day?
Throwback.
But playing like that over the course of a season and not rotating your squad a ton, which Vermes historically has not done a ton of, it creates wear and tear, especially when you're playing through the summer heat in KC, which is unforgiving. And we've seen them fade down the stretch time after time after time. And Vermes, I don't think, has done quite a good enough job of adjusting in that regard. So yeah, I think it's fair to ask questions of him. I also think on balance, he remains one of the better coaches in the league and one of the better GMs in the league. It's just kind of, you know, maybe they want to do a little bit more due diligence on injury history when it comes to their designated players. That might be a little unfair for Gotti Kenda. I don't think he really had any issues prior to this one. But Pulido is certainly a guy who's been in and out of lineups throughout his entire career. So that's sort of my general take on Kansas City, but they have a lot of work to do this offseason. And I think they do need to take a look in the mirror and kind of reevaluate and reassess and see where they want to go and see what kind of club they want to be.
It does feel like it's time. I mean, it has felt time for a while for them to kind of revamp the roster and reload. And it seemed like they might have been starting that process when they traded Beisler, where, you know, they moved on from Beisler, but that was it. It kind of stopped there. I think you're right in that there's a little bit of, not a little bit, a lot of loyalty, and that can be a good thing, but it can also be a bad thing as well. I'm interested to see what Peter Vermes does in rebuilding.
You know, I'm fascinated what the actual power dynamic is like within that front office. Like, does Vermes have people challenging him?
Definitely. You know, I don't know. I went and did a story where I was behind the scenes with Vermes on a game day and the day before game. And the thing that Peter said to me that stuck with me, and I, you know, there were multiple people in the front office then that, you know, not all of them are there still. Megan Cameron, for example, left to go to Miami. But that, you know, that there are fights that Peter like wants debate constantly in the room. He thinks it's the best way to get to the right solution. and that, you know, he's like, yeah, sometimes we all have to leave the room to cool off from each other. But like, ultimately, that's the best way to find solutions is to
I wonder how much, like, maybe this is unfair. And I'm admittedly judging almost entirely off of his sideline demeanor. but, you know, I wonder how much of that input he's really taking in. It sounds like from what you just said that he does that in a healthy way. But, you know, leaning on these guys, continuing to rely on them, not really refreshing the roster as a lot of them have aged, sort of speaks to me like somebody, you know, there's somebody that needs to get in there with a stronger voice and say, hey, we need to get X, Y, and Z done. But we'll see. Yeah. Maybe I'm off on that. Like I said, it's more of the famous gifts from the opener in Vancouver, I think, in 2020.
Yeah, it's
legendary. The F off one.
Yeah. Thank you, Ryan. Okay, we've got another request here. So I'm gonna let Andy come on. He's been waiting patiently. Andy.
Mike, and just before Andy goes, for those of you listening, this will be released in podcast form as well later on. So if you have to drop off at any time, you can get the full episode.
And you can find that podcast form on the Athletic Soccer Show feed or on the YouTube channel, the Athletic Soccer YouTube channel. We do have a video format of the podcast as well. Okay, Andy.
So first and foremost, I just wanted to congratulate both of you on, you know, the promotion, I guess we could call it, to the Athletic Soccer Show. Sounds like a very big opportunity for you guys. And, you know, I think you do great work. The second thing is, it seems like Toronto made a very head-scratching move with the Schaffelberg loan. So I was wondering if you could provide any insight or if, you know, like it's leading to, if that's a precursor move to something else that's going to come in the pipeline before the international window closes, if I understand correctly, today or tomorrow.
Yeah, the window closes tomorrow. Thank you, Andy. I appreciate it. So, Sam, you know, I think typically loans are a kind of a low risk proposition, right? You're sending one of your younger players on loan. You are required to have a buy option. That buy option can be set at a number where it's not going to happen, or if it does happen, that, you know, it there's still value for your team. Obviously, there's a lot of change going on in Toronto right now, and some really good players who have been brought in and are going to be demanding playing time. And I think this is probably an example of Bob Bradley looking at the situation and saying, we need, you know, our young players to still get minutes and still contribute, and it's not going to be happening here. And so, you know, we're going to find a loan situation that we think can help the club
in the short term and potentially the long term. Schaffelberg probably is someone that was interested in it as well, I would guess.
Yeah.
You know, he's a guy that plays on the left side. He's gotten a decent amount of minutes for Toronto over the years, but his playing time has dried up over the last few months now. And Toronto just signed Crescito and Insigne, and they're playing on the left. And I don't think Schaffelberg is going to unseat them. So, you know, maybe he pushed for it. Nashville could use another option in those areas, I think. Although Dan Lovitz is locked down at the left wing back position, but it never hurts to have some valuable depth. Maybe they can play him a little bit higher up. That's something he's done for TFC over the years. I don't know that it necessarily precipitates another move for Toronto. Although maybe, I don't know, maybe this is something where it can help them create. Well, he probably wasn't even on a senior roster, so he probably wasn't even counting towards the budget anyway. So I don't know how much cap space they'd be creating. But yeah, I don't know. That one struck me as slightly strange, but it's a guy that probably doesn't have much of a path towards a ton of playing time for the rest of the season. So I think that's the main motivation there.
Awesome. Okay. Chris Reifer is here with a request to speak. Chris, you are up on stage with us in a second here. Here we go. All right, Chris, floor is yours.
Hey, guys. First time, long time. Very much enjoy the show. So returning to your discussion of contracts like Christian Bale, in which the teams are finding a way to...
Christian Bale.
Yeah, teams are finding Gareth Bale. How did that happen? You know, I mean, it seems that we have a dynamic now where we've got some of these bigger market teams that are able to find creative ways around, you know, limitations like the DP rule. Traditionally, the bigger sort of rule hawks have been owners from, I think
rule
you can
hawks,
probably say,
that, hawks, like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah, lower revenue clubs who have tried to use these rules to control spending. Do you think that some of those owners who have been in that rule hawk category are now going to look around and realize that they are the primary prisoners of the rules, that other owners at bigger clubs aren't. And maybe that's going to shake loose some of the inertia and reform.
How do you figure that before you go off air? How do you figure that the smaller, the less ambitious or the lower budget are the primary prisoners?
I think that's just been, frankly, I mean, part of it has just been a matter of who has been on the negotiating committees. It seems MLS and CBA negotiations has had a habit of putting those types of owners on their negotiating committees during CBA talks, which makes sense that you would sort of put your hardest negotiators most directly with the players. And you do see it from, the Hunts and owners like that who are at these smaller market teams sort of coming up. You of course, don't see a lot of public commentary, at least broadly, on this. But it seems when we do, you know, I mean, there's a reason that back in the day when Deloitte Hansen was still in the league, he was one of the more vocal folks about this and about controlling these rules. His famous comments about free agency come to mind immediately. I think that at least creates the impression. Maybe it's wrong. You all are much better sourced than...
I don't think the rules are, and maybe I'm misinterpreting you, Chris, and please correct me if I am, but I don't think the rules are holding back the smaller budget teams more than they are the lower budget teams. They can't necessarily pull off a move like Bale to LAFC because they're not located in Los Angeles. And that was a major, major part of that deal, I think it's fair to say. But at the same time, if you liberalize the rules, I think their thinking goes that teams like LAFC would be able to pull off Bale-like deals on the regular. And it wouldn't be such like a historic, groundbreaking, one-of-a-kind thing. It would be something that would be happening all the time. And I think a big reason why the rules are in place is to prevent that happening with such frequency. So I don't know, to the point of, is this going to change? Man, this is something I think about all the time, but I hope so. I think it has to, for a million different reasons that I've talked about a million different times. But it's not really working as is, right? It's not drawing enough audience for the league to grow in the way that it wants to. And with expansion coming to an end, presumably, relatively soon, even if they go to 32, I don't think, you know, you only got 3 slots left. You're going to have to find a way to drive growth that isn't just buying or selling new markets. And that has to be through level quality of play as a big driver of that. And I think in order to do that, I think you need to change things up. As anyone who's listened to me on this well knows, predictable answer on that front. We'll talk more about this a little bit later on, in a way that we haven't really discussed before. So stay tuned for that too.
Yeah. I mean, I was about to do that, Sam. So I'm glad you said, but you know, I think there is going to be a question too, with these rules not changing, or if these rules don't change and the league continues to expand, about the quality of play in the league and how it can be sustained. You know, can our homegrown players going to be enough to sustain the player pool? You know, trying to find players that fit within the salary cap. I think we're starting to see issues.
Well, I've been making this point for a few years and maybe mostly privately, but you know, how many teams do you really enjoy watching around MLS from a purely soccer standpoint?
Yeah, like, not very many.
It's like LAFC and NYCFC at this point. And like, if you're like a pressing like fetish person, if you have one of those, maybe you enjoy it. Like Philly can be enjoyable. Maybe you like watching the Red Bulls in DC just assemble a bunch of rocks and throw them at each other as hard as they can for 90 minutes. That's not really my bag, but you know, if it is, more power to you. So I think something needs to break. But we'll see. I don't know if the owners feel the same way about it that we do. Because for all the issues that MLS has had with audience and with revenue and with not getting great returns, in my opinion, from the increases in money that they have spent on players, those valuations keep going up. And at the end of the day, that's probably the biggest top line motivating factor for all of these guys.
Yeah. And I just to tie a bow on this portion of it, at least, you know, the idea that the league could improve by getting rid of these silos and these different functions like TAM and U22 and all of that. And even if they kept DPs, it's not original to this podcast. It's not that.
No, we are geniuses, Paul. Stop.
Sam, you went back just yesterday, I think it was, and we're reading through the BCG study. The Boston Consulting Group survey that the league commissioned back in 2015, I believe it was, or it came out in 2015. Yeah. It might have been commissioned before that. And, you know, Pablo and I had reported on it previously and kind of went over what was in that study. But it was the BCG suggested a ceiling and a floor in order to improve quality of play and to encourage different ways to reach competitiveness within that model. That
7 years ago, they suggested this.
A long time ago. And the league chose to go the other direction because I think there was a difference of like 5% difference in parity, like that the bigger market or higher spending teams would gain 5% more advantage with the ceiling and floor by BCG's estimates or something like that. It was a choice that the league made to stay the way that they've stayed. And I think it will, I think it's going to have to change partly because I do think there are owners who are starting to get frustrated with being told what to do.
We'll see.
But I don't know.
If you're mad, let us know.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the team's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham, all new, Thursdays on FX, stream on Hulu.
We got some more people that want to come on stage, Paul.
We do. We have four more people. So I'm going to start with Gateway Gunner. You've been waiting the longest. Then we've got, just so you guys know, Gateway Gunner, then Owen, you'll be next. Yank Report, and then MLS Gone Wild. Gateway, floor is yours.
Gateway, you're muted.
Thanks. Thanks, Paul and Sam. My name's Lucas. I'm in St. Louis, the Gateway City. So I want to know, first of all, what you think of what Lutz has done with the international signings like Berkey and Nilsson and Leuven and Klaus. But then also, who are some domestic players that could be available after the season to round out the roster for St. Louis? Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for the question. I'll jump on this one, Sam. First of all, I want to say that we're hoping, and I think this is going to happen for 1v1, that we're going to have a conversation with Lutz next week. I don't know when that episode will run, but I am.
We are.
I am.
Paul's breaking news to me.
You're invited, Sam. You're invited if you want to come on 1v1. But I think I am going to have a conversation with Lutz, which will be great to get some of his ideas. I think there is going to be a lot of domestic players. First of all, with international signings so far, you know, for me, it's always TBD. Part of it is how motivated are these players? How healthy are they? What does the rest of the roster look like? It's really impossible to tell how these signings fit until you start to see how the roster comes together and where the focus of a roster is. But when I looked at the free agency list, just even the out of contract guys, not even considering some of the players who are on options who may become available as free agents, I think there's some quality to be had in free agency this year for a team like St. Louis. You can make a run at Aaron Long, and would St. Louis be the right type of market to have a DP center back in the Walker Zimmerman type with a guy like Aaron Long? You can make a run at Alex Kyens or Callens. I feel like he pronounces it both ways, or I've heard it both ways. He'll be a free agent NYCFC. Anton Tinnerholm, does he get re-signed by New York? Is he a free agent that you could pick up? Sean Johnson, a veteran goalkeeper. I mean, there are a lot of good – I mean, you're not going to sign Sean Johnson because you've got Berkey, but there are a lot of good quality players. There are a lot of good quality players in free agency that I think – could be added. So I guess I would say if I were St. Louis, I'd probably be targeting Aaron Long as my top free agent, just a veteran American player who can kind of become the the bedrock around the where you build the domestic side of your roster, kind of a Michael Parkhurst type signing, much more expensive than Parkhurst. But I do think that there are some good players to be had in free agency if you're St. Louis.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with Paul on the international front. I don't know a ton about the guys that they've signed, to be frank. You know, Klaus, not a hugely impressive 21-22 season, 4 goals and 4 assists in 28 games in the league in Belgium. That's not like a number that is like blowing my socks off by any means. So I think there's probably some work to do still up top. You know, they have a center back that they signed, I think, for, you know, a decent amount of money, I would guess, in Nielsen. So maybe that precludes a move for somebody like Long or Kajens potentially. But there are always good players available domestically. You know, we've seen Charlotte kind of learn that a little bit. Shin Yashiki being one that's had some success there that they acquired in a trade midseason. Ben Bender having a solid rookie season for them. So we'll see some names emerge and continue to emerge even after they begin play next year. As of now, I'm not expecting St. Louis to set the world on fire, but we'll see what they look like as things continue to come together.
I mean, it's also worth noting we don't know who their coach is yet, and that's going to dictate a lot of what types of players they're looking for.
No, we do. Bradley Carnot is their coach.
Oh, that's right. Carnell, man. Wow. I got to wake up this morning. This is why we usually
you miss your coffee.
I took my first sip of coffee. It'll show on our YouTube channel when this is uploaded. And that is why you cannot have two kids and not have coffee until 9:30 in the morning. all right. Thank you for the question. We're going to get to some of the other requests here. I said Owen would be next. So Owen, you are up.
Hey guys, well, I love listening to the podcast. My question is, Landon Donovan is a finalist for being the San Jose Earthquakes head coach. Do you think he will get the position, and do you think San Jose will help him become successful in that position? Thank you.
I think even if he gets offered the job, I don't think he'll take it. I don't think that's a good job, like at all. I don't think ownership there is committed to doing the things that they need to do in order to make that club successful. And I think in some ways you can look at it and say, okay, they have some good youth players coming up in the pipeline. And that can be attractive. You don't have pressure, so you can make some mistakes and learn on the job and kind of have an understanding that you're not going to be fired right off of the bat. You're going to have a decently long leash. So I think that's attractive. But I just think what's the ceiling for that club as currently constituted?
Yeah. I think it's
pretty low. So like, are you going to be like content being like a seventh, eighth place playoff bubble side? And like, where is your coaching career going to go from there? I don't know. If I'm Landon Donovan with the profile that he has and with the other jobs that might be available to him at some point later on, with San Diego maybe looking at an MLS expansion bid, and Landon, of course, living down there and establishing roots down there in that city, I might wait. I don't think I would go to San Jose.
Yeah, I've got some thoughts on San Jose just because I've, you know, been making...
Just sold Marcos Lopez.
Yeah, they just sold Marcos Lopez, and that was, you know, a move that had to happen. He was out of contract in 4 months, and they had an offer, seven-figure offer to sell him. But I think my problem with them is that there hasn't been a clear identity of who they want to be. And they have an ownership group that probably dictates what that identity has to be, which is a homegrown driven club.
Do you think that's what they're dictating? I don't think they're dictating anything.
I'm saying that their lack of ambition, their lack of willingness to spend, I think dictates that if you want to be successful,
that's the only path forward.
Yeah. If you want to be successful, the only way you can do it is develop your own talent. You know, you look at, you know, I reported
that
there was
started to do that.
Well, they have. But as an example, like I was just going to say, you know, I reported that Charlotte, speaking of Charlotte, recognizing the need for, you know, domestic talent, guys who, you know, what they do in MLS, made a trade request for Jackson Yule here at the end of this window. And the, you know, San Jose's two of their top young homegrown players play central midfield. And so it kind of reminded me of that moment where the Red Bulls traded Dax McCarty and everyone was going crazy, and it was to open up space for Tyler Adams. Now, the difference is Tyler Adams is Tyler Adams, right?
Right.
You can't assume that you're opening space for just any old homegrown, because not every homegrown is Tyler Adams. But I think that, you know, at a certain point, and it doesn't have to be right now in this window up against a deadline, but over these next few months, as they select a coach and as they try to figure out how they're going to rebuild this roster, because that's what's going to happen, you know, they need to start to figure out who do they want to be, or who will their owner allow them to be? What will their owner allow them to be? And if it's going to be a homegrown driven team, then, you know, you're going to have to take your lumps probably playing some of these younger players early on. And if you're Landon Donovan, are you walking into that situation? It's why it made a lot of sense to me when I had, you know, I think there was a pretty loud rumor out there that Lucci Gonzalez was a top candidate for the job. It since has calmed down significantly. And
from what I've heard, they haven't even interviewed him. Yeah.
Yeah. And that surprised me, just because if that's what you're going to be, if that's who you want to be, then, Lucci would be a pretty good choice.
To that same point that I made about Landon, though, if you're Lucci, don't you think a better job will be available for you?
Maybe. But there's so many things it depends on, but I think both of us are clearly down on San Jose. Sorry, Owen. Okay, let's go back to the requests.
Yank Report.
Yank Report is up. We just lost MLS Gone Wild. Yank Report, the floor is yours.
Good morning. Enjoy the show. I want to ask you guys a MLS transfer question. We've seen a lot of rumors and actual transfers come through from the Colombian League in this particular window. So I'm curious if you guys have any insights on why we're seeing so much influx from the Colombian League in this particular window. And also want to ask about the John Brooks rumors, just your thoughts on them in general, as far as him coming to San Jose.
Yeah, I'll start with John Brooks, Sam. I would be shocked if he went to San Jose, just from talking to people who know Brooks, and we just spoke about what's going to be happening in San Jose.
Yeah, but, here we are. The European seasons are starting in some cases, have already started. They're about to start in a few days. He doesn't have a job.
Yeah, he's clearly, I think, you know, I was asking around about him on Monday, and it sounds like he was kind of patiently waiting to see if there was the right fit of a club. Someone got injured and he could step in. But going to San Jose, all the way across the country from, you know, the family that he would still have in Germany, it would be a lot. And you're walking into a team with what kind of aspirations? Is that the team that's going to help you get back into the World Cup? Into the World Cup picture? I'm not sure. I don't know.
We don't know how desperate he is, man. That's like, true. He does not have a job. And like, European seasons are starting or have started.
I think part of the reason why he doesn't have a job is the money that he was making before. And, you know, is that what San Jose is going to pay you? I think that's the other X factor here. As for the Colombian League, I wish Felipe Cardenas was here, because Felipe is our Colombian expert. but I think in general, MLS teams are constantly looking for markets, and especially in South America, that haven't been invaded yet by the
MLS.
Yeah, by the high prices spent for DP players, like they have in Argentina and now in Uruguay as well. And this isn't totally new. Like I always reference this. Like Colombian, I was in Orlando in 2015. You know, Carlos Rivas came out of the Colombian League as a young designated player.
Diego Chara
is a Colombian. Yeah. But yeah, it seems like there's been some attention paid, and I think, you know, probably also helps that the South American youth championships have been held recently in the last year or so. There's been a lot more scouting done in South America.
Fabio Castillo. I don't think this is anything new. There have been Colombian players or players from out of the Colombian League coming to MLS for a long time now at a pretty good clip. I think probably circumstances aligned in such a way to sort of create a wave of them this summer. But I don't know if it's anything other than kind of a coincidence.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I will say that I will tell Felipe that we got a question about the Colombian League and perhaps on Copa, which is one of the new podcasts on the Athletic Soccer Show.
How about this?
Which is where Allocation Disorder now lives.
Wow.
where you can hear more from Felipe on Copa, his new podcast. And again, we're doing this live show, guys.
That's a professional promotion, Paul.
Did you like that?
Yeah, thank you. I loved it.
All right.
What a broadcaster.
We are doing this live show because we want people to know that we are now moving over to the Athletic Soccer Show podcast feed. You can find it on Google Podcasts. You can find it on Spotify, Apple, and on YouTube, on the Athletic Soccer YouTube channel. So make sure you guys are following the Athletic Soccer Show feed so that you can continue to hear Allocation Disorder. All right. MLS Gone Wild is back. So MLS Gone Wild, the floor is yours.
Is MLS Gone Wild ever really gone?
No, MLS is,
always going wild.
Yeah, and MLS was incredibly wild and completely on brand last night. What a crazy night, that 5-4 game. But guys, thanks for taking my question. Appreciate you guys having the space. Paul, you briefly mentioned it earlier. That's why I backed out for a sec, but I am back. Jackson Yule to Charlotte. They missed out on the bid for Aaron Ramsey. You reported earlier this week that there's potential for Jackson Yule to go to Charlotte with one day remaining in the international transfer window. Do you think that they get that done? And then I have one question regarding the Crew and big signings. We've seen Gareth Bale and Insigne, Bernadeschi, and Chiellini come over this transfer window. We've also seen Cucho, who's emerged onto the scene for the Columbus Crew. Where does the Cucho signing rank amongst those big signings in this window?
Thank you. Sam, I'll let you start. Where does the Cucho signing rank?
Where does it rank? I mean, in terms of on-field instant impact at the top, right? Like, the guy's been incredible since he came to the league. He can't stop scoring goals. So that's been, like, off the charts. I think he will continue to have a lot of success in MLS. I think a really dynamic player, really talented, obviously. And I think he'll, you know, most importantly, has a neck tattoo. So,
very important. Actually, yeah. You know, it does confirm my completely biased opinion that there is like a certain profile of striker that every MLS team should be looking for. And, you know, I think that Caleb Porter summed it up nicely. Must have a neck tattoo and kind of carry that attitude into his game. But I would agree. I think Cucho, you know, that's the type of signing that like typically, doesn't get as much love. I think he got plenty of love.
I mean, it was a $10 million move, right? Yeah, like it's one of the more expensive signings in MLS history. Yeah,
but like when Gareth Bale happens and Insigne happens and Chiellini happens at the same time, it was like
the brand recognition.
It was a weird window. We haven't had a window like that in a while in MLS where they're like big name older stars coming in that kind of wave.
What was the last
of signings.
One? 2015?
No, probably Higuain and Matuidi.
Yeah,
that was two different windows, though, right?
I think
it was
so.
Two different windows.
No. They were both summer.
All right. Well, there you go. That's probably that. But that, you know, didn't hit the same. Maybe that's just hindsight. As far as Jackson Yule, I think that I don't know this for sure. I haven't looped back around to you know, these windows move fast. A lot can happen today and tomorrow going into the deadline. So anything could happen. Offers start to go crazy when teams start to get desperate. But I would say that I'm pessimistic if you're a Charlotte fan that you're going to see Jackson Yule play for Charlotte. I mean, he's a player that San Jose have, clearly value highly and has been performing well this year.
What do you think? So, what do you think his value, his market value is? You know, we saw Mark Anthony Kay go for $1 million+ and Ralph Preso.
Yeah, I mean, that's the interesting question. It's funny that you say that, Sam, because I actually asked around to try to figure out like what people would peg him at, because this market is changing because there's so much more GAM available now in the MLS marketplace. It's hard to peg a valuation, but I would say that he's somewhere around $1 million, and San Jose probably wants more than that. You know, I'm guessing San Jose's ask would be, 1.2, 1.3. But I would say he's probably around $1 million player when you consider what the prices have looked like for other MLS trades.
Yeah.
I would agree. All right. We've got a couple more people. Nick Harris, you've been waiting patiently. Go ahead, Nick. Jump on in. The floor is yours. Make fun of us if you want to. Make fun of Allocation Sorter. And how have we not gotten a question?
No, don't make fun of us. What are you talking about?
I just want to know. I can't believe we've gone this far without getting a question about the discovery rule or – I guess we've had sort of questions about allocation order.
I think we've had good questions.
We've had great questions. I'm just shocked that
I don't want to talk about the discovery rule.
Sam loves the discovery rule. All right, Nick, I hope that by pure coincidence, you are going to ask Sam about the discovery rule. But the floor is yours, Nick.
Thank you, guys. Thank you for taking my question as well. I'm curious with you guys, with the Gaga move, it seems like that's going to hurt the Fire more on the defensive side. So is there a discovery rule thing that will help them find a new goalkeeper? Or
I like that you worked the
well
discovery
done.
Rule.
Well Thank done. You, Nick. Will it hurt them on the defensive side? Probably. I think it doesn't matter when you're talking about a $10 million fee that could rise to 15. They also like the other homegrown goalkeeper they have, Chris Brady.
Chris Brady, yeah.
I don't know if he'll be the guy going forward. Paul, you're certainly a lot more plugged into the goings-on around the Chicago Fire than I am, so maybe you can take this away. But I think given where they are in the table, I don't think they're so concerned about this year. When you get an offer like that for Slonina, you know, you take it, especially because he isn't going anywhere. He's going to finish the season with Chicago.
Hey, man. Hey, the Fire are unbeaten in four. They won three in a row. They are back in the playoff mix. This is MLS.
MLS, man.
You win a game or two, you are in the
Just
hunt.
Just trash, okay? Trash teams being in the playoff mix. Love that.
MLS. I just think, yeah, this is a no-brainer move for the Fire. Does it make them worse defensively? I guess so. I mean, Solonina has been a good
He hasn't been amazing
He hasn't
this year.
Been, you know, he hasn't been like Matt
he's
Turner.
He's cost changing. Them points in games.
Sure. So it's a total no-brainer. I think that what will be interesting to see is, do they say, okay, we're going to give Chris Brady a chance to be the number one, and they go into the market and they look for a backup goalkeeper or a veteran goalkeeper at a modest price and allow it to, you know, with the hope that Brady wins the job? Or do they go the other direction and they look for a high-level starting goalkeeper and, you know, they kind of send the signal Chris Brady needs another year or two in order to be a starting-level goalkeeper, and we're gonna find a starting solution that's, you know, like I said, a 1 or 2 year contract. That is what I'm interested to see from the Fire when it comes to the goalkeeper position. I don't know which way they'll go. I think, you know, they gave Chris Brady a long-term contract, so they don't need to rush it along, but certainly they think highly of him, and he is the starting goalkeeper for the U.S. under 20. So if Gaga Slonina doesn't go to the U-20 World Cup, Chris Brady could be going, and that's another thing to keep in mind if you're the Fire, that you're going to be potentially missing Brady for you know, a month or a few weeks in the middle of the season as well. And so, yeah, I think that'll be the interesting thing to watch. All right, we have one more request. Patrick Murphy. I'm bringing Patrick Murphy onto stage, and we'll see what he has to say. But Gaga Slonina, man, $10 million. Pretty big move for the Fire. Probably sends a pretty big signal to their academy.
Yeah, one of the bigger outgoing transfers in league history.
Pretty incredible.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Pretty incredible what's happening in the MLS market. All right, Patrick, the floor is yours. You're muted, Patrick, just so you know.
Patrick.
Well, Sam, you're going to have to come up with a topic while we wait for Patrick. Sam, what do you think about the discovery rule?
I'm not talking about that, is what I think. We do have a bigger topic
Here we go.
That I want to discuss. There's Patrick.
There
There's
we go.
Patrick.
We got Patrick.
Yeah. No, we lost him again.
Now we lost Patrick.
Man, brutal.
Oh. All right.
Patrick, if you're having issues, you can just type out your question on Twitter. Oh, there you are.
Patrick, go ahead, buddy. Nope, we lost.
All right. All right. I think we're going to have to bail
Sam,
on
you've got to
Patrick, just type your question and we'll try and answer it.
Yeah, we can watch it in the chat.
Paul, I have a question for you, and I'm just going to keep it short and sweet. Is there too much parity in MLS?
Yes.
Why?
Yes. I mean, I think I don't think it's necessarily about too much parity. I think it's the way we get to the parity that's the problem.
Well, we've talked about that. We talk about that all the time. Is there too much parity in MLS? Is it still interesting when every team feels like they're kind of the same?
I do think for most people who are tuning in, it is. It does make it more interesting. I think the problem is for me as a neutral viewer is that there are teams that you are clearly not good that are in the playoff hunt for a long time, and that is a little bit I don't know the right word to use, but I'm not motivated to watch those games between the ninth and seventh best teams in the East fighting for the seventh playoff spot when I feel like those front offices or those teams are being rewarded for not having a great roster. And that's where I start to get upset. I think the problem is I feel like there's not enough parity at the top right now of the standings. Like I feel like
this is what I'm talking about. There's no like defined upper class year to year in MLS, apart from a couple of select teams. I would say Seattle and NYCFC mainly would be those two. And those two teams aren't really dominant regular season teams. They're solid every year, but they're not blowing teams out for the most part. Although, you know, NYCFC can do that from time to time. Paul, I ran some numbers this morning. I got in my spreadsheets and, you know, I just looked at the finish in the Supporters Shield standings of every team in MLS over the last 5 years and how much that changed year to year. Right. And so the annual average change over that 5 year spread is 6 places across the league. For the Premier League, I was curious. Let me do a little comparison, right? The average annual change, so the number of places on average that a team went up or down in the standings year to year, was 2.99, half, right? And I'm not saying that competitive balance is a bad thing. I don't think any league should strive to be what you've seen in Germany or Spain or Italy, for that matter, for the most part, where a lot of seasons you enter knowing that, okay, there's one team that's going to win the title. Or maybe there's two teams that are going to duke it out. Maybe three if you get lucky. I don't think that's productive either. But I think MLS has gone too far down the spectrum of competitive balance. And I think it's gotten to a point where you don't know year to year who the elite are going to be. Right? We had that discussion about Kansas City earlier. Right? Going from first to worst, essentially. Look at New England and Colorado. They were the top two teams in the Shield last year. I think they're 19th and 24th. In the standings right now. Maybe Colorado jumped because I haven't looked since they won last night. But that doesn't happen anywhere else. And I think that hurts the ability of the league to kind of tell stories and sell itself to fans. Yeah. And I don't know, maybe I'm overdoing this. I think there will always be competitive balance when you have single elimination playoffs. So I don't think you need to manufacture as much of it within a regular season. I'm curious. I'm going to dive more into those numbers later today. Look at other leagues in Europe. Look at other leagues in the Americas, and look at goal difference too, because I think that'll kind of tell us what it looks like within individual seasons.
I think you hit the nail on the head there, Sam. Is that the thing about MLS is that everyone always has a chance to win a title because it's a single elimination playoff. You know, 50% of the teams make the playoffs. Like, you don't need to be so focused on the regular season, everyone feeling like they have a chance. Like there's, you know, it's good to create, like, think about when Seattle and Toronto were constantly facing off in MLS Cups. Like, it was starting to feel like there was like a power battle every year in MLS to who was going to be the best. And that was interesting. Or when you go even further back when there were fewer teams in the league and, you know, Red Bulls playing or Metro Stars, however far back you want to go, playing against DC United. Those games were great, not just because those teams hated each other, but because they were both decent teams. Not always. I don't want to group every time.
Yeah, I don't know if that's the best comparison.
But, you know, I think that there is something to be said about, again, just allowing teams to maximize their potential.
Yeah, let those teams that want to be elite try and separate themselves in a meaningful way, and let everybody else try and keep up. And even if they can't, as long as they do enough to finish in the top 7 in their conference, they'll have a shot. And I think that's more than enough legislated parity. And I think right now they're in a place where just, I don't know, maybe it's just me. It just feels really homogenous. Like, I could watch any game and I don't know who's going to win. And I think there's positive elements of that. But I think in aggregate, over the course of a season or multiple seasons, it just becomes hard to create like heroes of. Think about like the NBA and super teams, right? Like, I think those are good for interest and for viewership. The NFL has great competitive balance, right? You see rags to riches and riches to rags every year in that league. But the NFL demand is inelastic for that product. That's not really the case in any other sports league besides maybe the Premier League. And so I don't think you can really look at that and say that's a model that we want. Well, just because it's such a different universe in every single way.
I think that one of the problems that the league has faced and faces, you know, still is, how do we get people to tune in to our games? And that's not just tune into your local game. Like, they've been pretty good at that in terms of people.
No, it's how do we make people fans of the league?
Right. Yeah. How do we get a Portland fan to care enough to tune into Columbus, Nashville in the middle of the week? And I think the problem is that there's nothing compelling right now about a lot of these matchups.
Well, maybe yellow's their favorite color in that case.
You know what I mean, though? Like, how can you convince a soccer fan that MLS is the league to start watching without something? You need somebody to root for or somebody to root against. You need drama. You need stakes. And yeah. I feel like part of it is that because everyone is so everything in the league is so homogenous, everyone's so in the same place, that it doesn't feel like there are stakes unless you're fighting for a playoff spot, which are bad teams. So it's like, Right. Oh, we'll watch our bad teams try to get seventh place.
And that's not compelling either. Maybe I'm overstating this because there are so many other elements to this problem. And maybe if you had a truer elite in MLS of 6 to 8 teams, and you had some teams that really struggled, and then you had the rest kind of duking it out for those playoff places, maybe it wouldn't make a difference at all. But I don't know. For me, at least the matchups at the top of the league would become a lot more compelling. And I think right now the league is in a place where those games aren't even as interesting as they have been, even in prior years in MLS.
Yeah,
like it's just the swings and the variance between year to year between who's at the top and who's not involved at the top. Like I mean, man, like top three teams in the league last year were three of the top four were New England, Colorado, and KC, and they're all pretty bad this season. New England set the points record, and they're 15th. Like, how does that happen? What kind of league does that happen in? It's crazy.
Yeah. And it's not an easy problem, like you said. But it is a problem. And I think, you know, part of it probably comes down to the table too. Like, at the top of a table, when you're a single table, you're all fighting for first place, and with an unbalanced schedule, that we know the supporter shield is thought of differently, and you have two different conferences, and so you're fighting for your seeds.
Yeah.
But is there a big difference between finishing second and third in your conference? Not really. So there's so many different elements.
Those are still consistent outcomes. Like, just the swings of the elite team, the historic best regular season points total team in MLS history. You know, and they made a few moves. They lost some key players in Turner and Buchanan and Buxa. But like dropping how they've dropped, it's kind of astounding. Same with the Rapids. You know, and I think we knew that both those teams punched above their weight last year, even as it was happening. But the gap is just wild to me. I need to think about this more and marinate on it, but I'm trying to write something on it. Otherwise, I'm just going to be spending a lot of time in Google spreadsheets for no damn reason.
Not the first time that's happened to you, Sam, I'm sure.
Probably won't be the last.
Well, listen, we've got, you know, 3 minutes left in this hour-long live show. Not that we set an hour-long limit on
it. Are we putting a limit on it?
No, not really. But, you know, I do feel that, again, I want to emphasize.
Hold on. Pablo's. Check out our podcast. Pablo's
no, I was getting that. I was getting there. Did you already bring him up on stage?
No, I didn't. Oh, he left?
Here we go.
Pablo, figure it out, man.
Pablo, add a speaker. Pablo Maurer is here. He wants to talk. And I felt like this is a good way to start to wrap up this live show.
I don't know, man. I say we go for another hour.
Yeah. We're doing a telethon for the Athletic Soccer Show.
Yeah.
We're going to be here all day.
Who are we raising money for?
We're raising money for the San Jose Earthquakes.
Oh, God. Oh, well,
I don't know what's going on with Pablo.
I don't know what's going on.
He's having trouble connecting. Pablo's like on Chicateague Island right now with some horses and no cell service.
Oh, that's the horse island.
Yeah, well, there's two of them.
Oh, have you ever been?
I've not been to Chicateague or Assateague, but Pablo has. Pablo, which one do you go to, Chicateague or Assateague?
He requested again. I don't think he's on.
Unbelievable.
Pablo. Try him again. I'm blaming this on you.
That was the perfect question to bring Pablo up. There we go. Pablo, Chicateague or Assateague? You're muted, Pablo.
Pablo, are you on a horse right
Can
now?
Can you hear me now?
There we go.
Yeah.
Sorry, right. I'm not a long-time listener here, first-time caller. No, I'm in Washington, D.C. I'm in my car. I was struck by something you guys were talking about.
Paul, wait, so did Paul just make that up?
No,
What's going on here?
I was supposed to go camping this weekend, but then I didn't. So
it's Wednesday. It's not the weekend.
It's called vacation. It's a long, every day is a weekend when you're on vacation. Go ahead, Pablo.
I was struck by something. I think Sam is pretty spot on about, you know, with his parity argument. I'm also struck just from a business standpoint of, I've often thought this, that, you know, like right now the primary sort of driver of franchise values going up in the league are expansion fees. And I think at some point, although I'm not entirely convinced this will happen, they'll have to stop expanding. And at that point, the only thing that will be able to drive franchise values up essentially is the quality of the product or the quality of the teams. And I think like the sort of superstars and mega clubs are sort of essential to doing that. I also think the way the system is set up right now, where these franchises keep going up no matter essentially what you do, and we're making the playoffs is like the lowest bar imaginable. It's what teams aim for. Makes it easy for a lot of teams just to say, oh, it's fine. You know, like we'll be in that 50%. Our franchise fee, you know, our valuation will continue to climb, and, you know, it creates laziness. So I think it's important eventually to create the sort of dynamic that Sam's talking about. I don't know. That's just my thought.
Oh, I obviously agree. I think you're a very smart and wise man, Pablo.
I know. We both are smart.
This is the upset of the century here. Pablo coming on to Allocation Disorder live and immediately agreeing with Sam Staskel and praising his ideas. It's just,
oh, come on. We're all stunned. The tension between me and Pablo is overstated.
Sam, I texted Paul earlier on the program and I said, Sam is really good on this program. And then I promptly said, do not tell him I said that.
Yeah, because you wanted to tell me yourself. Thank you.
Yeah, exactly.
No, but I think you're right. Like I don't know. But the problem is that you have so many owners who would be affected negatively on an individual level if they allowed this to happen, right? Because if you're Colorado or Chicago, well, yeah, you kind of like the fact that you can suck for half the year and still be involved and still be in it. It creates a degree of security. So you're asking them to take on more risk and potentially be exposed as, I don't know, being bad at the rich guy Olympics that is owning a professional sports team.
But that's not 100% true, because as we said before, that race for the seventh playoff spot still exists. You still get into the tournament at the end of the year. That's a single elimination tournament. You might not be competitive with the first and second and third place teams for the whole year, and have them be much better than they are now. But at the end of the day, you're still competing. You get into seventh and you have a shot in one game to beat that team. So they can still sell what they're selling and maybe see that gap grow, where we can see a little bit more of competitive soccer at the top of the table.
You guys said you have a couple minutes left, so I think we should probably just unpack Pro Rel.
Yeah, yeah. Ooh. We don't talk about that on Allocation.
All right, let's do it. No, let's do it. Let's do it. All right, it will never happen, but it would be better if it did. How about that? I'm pro rel. I said it.
I mean, is there anybody in American soccer who I mean, that is the answer everybody would give you, is yeah, it'd be great.
Is there anybody in American soccer who disagrees with that stance? Yes, everyone who matters.
Well, you're right. Every MLS owner, as Ian Ayer once told me, it'd be like asking MLS owners to vote for Pro Rel would be like asking turkeys to vote for Thanksgiving.
Yeah. No, and he's right. Like, and it's understandable if I paid a $325 million expansion fee to get in a league, and then I was like, hey, you're going down. See you later. Maybe never. I wouldn't be into that idea either.
I do think though that it's become a more reasonable discussion to have as the second division teams have started to there have been more that have emerged with real investment, stadiums being built and ownership groups that are putting actual money into the teams. I mean, there's still a long way for USL to go. They have short-term contracts. There are still areas where they can improve.
I don't think the ecosystem's quite ready for it.
No.
If this ever happens, make no mistake, if Pro Rail ever happens, it's going to be some version of MLS 1, MLS 2. Yeah. And it's also going to be...
I don't think that'll happen.
Yeah, it's going to be what the league uses to justify expanding to, 8,000 mm-hmm. teams or whatever it is, That I fully expect.
I think, though, to get out of dreamland and to ground ourselves back down to earth slightly here, there does need to be a serious conversation about stakes and raising them. Like, there are no real financial incentives for performance in MLS on a team level. Not real ones. Like, in England, how much money you make as a club is tied, at least in part, to where you finish in the standings. And that creates a motivating factor that doesn't exist here in MLS. And, to your point about valuations, Pablo, that's part of the reason valuations are so high across the league, is because there's guaranteed sets of income, or that regardless of how you do in the league, you're going to be getting the same revenue share and all of those different kinds of things. But I do think the league needs to find a way to kind of raise the stakes and make games matter more.
What if we tweak this new media deal to pay teams more that are more consistently in the top third of the league?
Ooh, I like it.
Yeah. Speaking of pipe dreams that will never happen.
Yeah. Absolutely. Do we have any other, Pablo? Not to kick you off, but we do have another request.
Hey, what are you
from
doing,
Scott
Paul?
Innes. Pablo can stay on. Let's just bring Scott in and let Scott ask his question.
Yeah. You're in here. Pablo's here too. Scott, the floor is yours, Scott. Scott. We got a dead air situation. Scott, we're waiting for you.
This is we're breaking the cardinal sin of podcasting. Somebody talk. Oh man.
Maybe this is the right way to wrap up this pod, is to just, have Scott take us home with a bit of dead air and end it the way Sam usually ends shows, as Scott would know, and as anyone else who listens to the show, is that you say a few random words and then you basically stop mid-sentence and say the show is over, and then that's how the show ends. So,
guys, maybe we can close with me just telling the both of you that you guys are my favorite MLS podcast.
Thank you, Pablo. I'm gonna text that to David Goss immediately, and he's gonna be furious.
I really like going on David's podcast, and then just saying embarrassing things about the league on the league's air. And listening to
you're not allowed to say that out loud. People listen to this show, Pablo. Be careful.
I'm gonna go ahead and mute myself.
All right. Well, thank you, Pablo. Thank you to everyone else who's been here listening to Allocation Disorder live. Sam, again, we're gonna be on. We want to say thank you to Total Soccer Show. For giving us the opportunity. Taylor, Daryl. Brought us into the Total Soccer Show family. Joe Lowry was editing us. Sam was yelling at Joe, don't take that out of the show.
At 2 a.m. most of the time, by the way.
It would confuse Joe. Yeah. Do I really take that out of the show, or do I really not take it out of the show? We don't know.
Joe, take this out of the show if you're listening.
So thank you to them. But yeah, we will be living on the Athletic Soccer Show feed going forward. So make sure you're following the Athletic Soccer Show feed. You can find us on YouTube as well. And, this is me trying to carry the piano here at the end of the show to make Sam angry.
Do you want some help? You good?
No, you good. Yeah, I always
All right, we're good. Thanks for listening. This has been Allocation Disorder. I'm Sam. He's Paul. Until next week.